Welcome to the channel. Welcome to another episode of Scientology Stories. I'm Mark Headley, your host. And joining me today is my lovely wife, Claire.
Thank you. We're going to have a good one today.
We do. We have a great story today. This is going to be part of the series on the channel or the playlist on the channel called Scientology Escape Stories. And in this episode, we are going to cover Catherine Olson. And let's bring Catherine in here.
Good to see you, Catherine. Thank you so much for joining us.
I always do that, make sure everyone's awake.
Yes, there you go.
So if you haven't seen the other video that we did with Catherine on the channel, we'll put a link in the description. But Catherine, you were a Sea Org member. Why don't you just tell us just your basic background in a nutshell before you got to Columbus, Ohio?
So I joined Scientology in Portland, Oregon in 1992. And soon after that, I went on staff with my mom and my sister.
How old were you when you went on
staff? I always get this wrong. I think I was 16. I guess I was 16, 15 or 16. Okay. I always get mixed up on my age.
And when you say staff, people should know that there's different kind of levels of Scientology employment. And being on staff is you just live it wherever you live, and then you come in for a certain amount of hours each day. Like they have part-time staff and full-time staff. And so you were part-time staff?
I was full-time staff. This particular org had an organization, church, whatever you want to. I don't like to call it church, but they had what's called day and foundation. So there's people that work just during the day, and then there's people that work in the evening. So I was on the foundation schedule, but really I was there like almost all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what?
So then I got recruited for the Sea Org, and it took me almost a year. I got recruited. I got signed up in like 1993, and then you're supposed to like replace yourself on your post and all this stuff.
And when you say signed up, that's when you signed a billion.
Yeah, I signed my billion year contract in
1993. When you were 16?
16, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the preferred age.
Yeah.
If not younger.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Then I was supposed to recruit a replacement for my post, and I couldn't recruit anybody. I could not recruit anybody.
To clarify, so you signed a billion year contract, but in order to go and do your billion year contract, you have to get somebody else
to
do your job in the organization where you were working first.
Yeah. Because they can't afford to have anybody move anywhere without adding another body in.
Right.
And it was a very small org. So
yeah.
So how did you end up getting? So I'm not trying to tell the whole story that we told in the other video, but I'm just trying to give somebody background so they know how you ended up in Columbus. So then when did you actually start in the Sea organization and where?
I started in the Sea Org in LA on Hollywood Boulevard. In the Hollywood Guarantee Building, which is where middle management is. I started there in April 1994. Yes, sorry. Yeah, April 1994.
And how old were you then?
I guess I was 17 by that time.
Okay.
I think I was 17. I'm telling you, I get confused.
Yeah, no,
I don't even remember my current age.
For the longest time, when somebody would be like, oh, hey, how, and this, we would be in conversation and Claire would be with me, and somebody would ask me how old I was, and I would look at Claire and she would say, you're 37, you're 42 or whatever it was. And I'd be like,
I do that with John because he's like really good at all this stuff. He's like, you were 15 when you signed up and you were 16 when you joined. And that was in 1992, 1993. And he like has all these dates. Somehow he knows my entire life.
Well, so. But also in the real, in the outside world, outside of Scientology, there's usually like milestone events that happen at certain ages, like grades in school or levels in school and high school and college. And so we don't have any of those kind of markers. So once you're in, it just seems like a, just a forever period.
That's a really good point. I never thought of that.
So we don't really have the same time markers to remember things. It's just like, oh, you were working for Scientology. And what years? I don't remember, man. It was just a lot of years.
And we exactly. don't even have the media markers either. Like the, oh yeah, when Friends was playing or when Simpsons or whatever, like none of that is just even a part of the timeline. It's just big old blur.
Okay. Yeah, so then
my markers are like major things that happened organizationally. Like, this was when all these people got busted and sent to the RPF. And
that happened around the time when, remember when there was like 50 people a day were being offloaded from the Sea Org? Yeah. And you're like, yeah, I remember
and,
that.
And like, this is when the anonymous protest started. And like,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you were in the Sea Org in Los Angeles. And then, what year? So that was 1994. Mm-hmm. What year did you end up being moved to Columbus to be in the Sea Org to run that Scientology organization?
It was October 2019.
Okay, wow. So that's what is that? Is that
it's a lot of years?
Math whiz, but 20, that seems like 25 years.
25, yeah. So because in Los Angeles. I can remember that because I got my 25 year pin right before that.
That's right. They still have those. It's like it's like a Sea Org symbol with like a diamond in it or
well,
something.
Well, it was supposed to be a ring, right? It was supposed to be a ring.
To be a ring. And people were so pissed off when they changed it to a pin. I'm like, we were supposed to get our ring. This is a stupid pin. And plus, I was in an estates uniform, so I couldn't even wear it.
Ugh. But now let me ask you this. Did you have to pay for the pin?
No.
So somebody told me that they got a pin or a ring or something and they had to pay for it. And then there was another person who told me that they got a ring and then they kept it when they left. Like when they got their stuff, the ring wasn't there. Oh, you can't keep the ring.
Oh, interesting.
Do you still have the pin?
They would probably, I do have the pin. I can get it.
No. Okay. So you were in Los Angeles for 25 years. Then you go to Columbus, Ohio.
That's right.
Okay, and the reason that you went to Columbus, Ohio was because the org, tell us why they sent all these Sea Org members to take over like a Scientology org, because that's not a normal thing for like a Scientology outpost, just one of these organizations. Those are usually run by the staff members, the part-time and the full-time staff members. It's not billion-year contract people at those outlier organizations. So
yeah, you usually just have a few Sea Org members there as like representatives like for the, various like things, the, finance.
Yeah, usually it's the, things, yeah. the director of special affairs or the flag banking officer or some of those people, because they're in more sensitive areas like the money and the the nonsense department, where basically all organizations have one person that's is it the Department of Special Affairs? What do they call that?
Yes, it's the Department of Special Affairs. And actually most of those people out in the city organizations like that, they're not.
They're just staff members.
They're just staff. Yeah. Most of them are. And most of them have been there for like forever. And so even if somebody wanted to say, oh, all these guys should be Sea Org members, it's kind of hard to like switch them over because like they're like,
they're the ones that are set up.
They did with their, police department and various things like that. And everybody knows them publicly. And
Okay. So, but why did this one get all these Sea Org members sent to it?
So there were two organizations that in 20, okay. So, backing up. So beginning of 2019 was when the whole quote chase wave thing blew
up. Those who aren't familiar, Scientology had a worldwide credit card scam going where they were billing people's credit cards and without authorization and overcharging. And it was millions and millions.
It was a whole system set up of getting more credit. Like someone in the org would contact the company and get their credit upped, and people would pay off each other's cards, and all this stuff was happening. And it all came from LA org, which is where they started, and they exported it to every single org because they had this training program where the executives would come in and train in LA org, and they'd be like shown how to do this stuff.
Teach them.
And it ended up being all over the world.
And in the end, the reason it's called the Chase Wave is because Chase, the bank or the credit card company, said, "We're not accepting Scientology. You're out. You can't be part of, use Chase anymore because it's all, there's so much widespread fraud going." And Scientology does this with all credit cards. I don't know why Chase is the only one that cut them off. In the 1990s, I remember in the 80s and 90s, I remember Amex, American Express had blackballed Scientology and said, you're not allowed to use our cards.
Yeah. So that makes me really happy to have a Chase credit card now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've got one. What's in your wallet? I think that's the one, but either way, okay. So that's what the Chase Wave was. And so one of those places where that was being done was, well, it was being done everywhere. So why
did it was being done everywhere. So what happened was as part of that, they busted all the people that were signing up people for service. They busted all the missionaries that were like out, Sea Org members out in various orgs that were recruiting people so that the org could open up, because they like they do renovations, they do all these renovations and then they do a grand opening as if they've opened a new organization, right? So all those people were recalled to LA and nobody was out in the orgs doing any recruiting for like from January 2019, like for the entire year.
Wow.
So what happened was the renovations in Kansas City and Columbus were totally done and the orgs were ready to open. They were just sitting there, totally ready to open. And they couldn't be open because they didn't have enough staff because nobody was out there recruiting. So finally, it kind of came to a head, and I'm sure somebody was like, you're going to open those orgs. I don't care how you do it. Probably Miscavige was like, you're going to open those freaking orgs this year.
Of course.
And so middle management.
So they have to do it.
That's right. So middle management, somebody in middle management is like, okay, fine. We're sending Sea Org. So they pulled people for those two organizations, Kansas City and Columbus. They from LA, from Flag, from PAC, Big Blue, whatever people call it now, from the Continental Liaison Office in East US. I think there were even some foreign people pulled, but so they rounded up
all the Sea Org members that weren't essential, or they weren't going to live or die without those people.
No, they rounded up whoever they wanted. It wasn't even just whoever they could spare. It was like, I want this person for this post. I want this person. They just tore everything apart.
And they took
a bunch of the missionaries that were busted and put them in there as well.
Wow. And so, but the other thing I want to make clear, and if you're a Scientologist watching this, or you're an ex Sea Org member, or if you're just a, what we call never in, so these people, you didn't all know each other.
Not necessarily.
You got sent there because you could have been from any Sea Org installation anywhere that just ended up in this one location.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think that was one of the only times where they like took all these staff and put them all in at the same time and just like, and then just open the org. Usually it's like people trickle in and get recruited and blow and slowly.
So you were kind of all brand new when the org opened. You were new there too. Even the Sea Org members that were running the organization,
that's right.
You didn't know anybody in Ohio. You didn't know where to eat or, you know, so you guys were all just fresh.
That's right. There were a few non-Sea Org members that were there too, that were the already existing staff in Columbus. There were like less than 10 people there
that weren't part of
the
credit card fraud or any of the nonsense.
Yeah. How many Sea Org members approximately was it that were brought in to Columbus Org?
It was over. It started out with over 100 people.
Wow. So there was less than 10 staff there. And then all of a sudden, more than 100 Sea Org members come in. And so let me ask you, so how long, so you arrived in Columbus, how long was it until the organization then opened?
So we arrived, I arrived at the end of October, and it was like over a couple of week period that everybody was sent in, right? And then the org opened November 11th.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And November 11th, what year?
2019.
Okay. So then 2019 it opens. Okay. And then what did you only have one job that whole time? Did you have one post?
Yeah.
What was your post?
Yeah. What they did is they got everybody together at the new org one day, like a few days or like a week before we were supposed to open. And they're like, okay, we're going to tell everybody what your job is. And then they announced each person. And I was put in Division 6 as the Director of Public Promotion.
And for those that don't know, Division 6 is the division of the Scientology organization that is responsible for getting new people to come into the organization. That's their total job, right, is to get people in and then maybe do a seminar or a course or some kind of extension thing, and then to get them in, and their job is to get them into the organization and then to turn those people over to Division 4, which is where they get trained to be Scientologists. That's the sole purpose of Division 6, or what in Scientology everybody just calls it Div 6.
And so how did they choose that job for you?
I have no idea. Just because I was, so
I want to do this.
No. Nobody was asked. No. Some people were asked, like on the more like executive type positions, people were asked or like told, like, "Hey, we want to post you as this. What do you think?" But on the lower level posts, didn't ask you. They're just
like, "You're the director of public."
And it's not like you'd ever had experience in that.
No, that was the thing. I was put in charge of a major marketing campaign. That because we got like how much was it? I think it was like $200,000 or something for a marketing campaign. As soon as the org opens, they do this whole non-existence campaign for the organization. So I was put in charge of this. No experience in marketing, no training in marketing,
Let's just be clear, for the many years prior to going to Columbus, you were in the food service department.
I was in food service for 12 years, and then before that, I was working in the data bureau, which is, that's a whole explanation. But that's what that's like.
When you were doing an office job, and then you were doing
food service. Yeah, I was doing office. Yeah, that's right.
And then you became, now you're in charge of all of the marketing for a Scientology organization. It's the only organization in Ohio, right? The one in Columbus. There's not another one.
There's one in Cincinnati. There's two, actually.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It's one of the few states that has more than one.
Your job is to get people into Scientology in Ohio.
That's right. And that's right.
You never did that anywhere before, except for when you were in the org. That's right.
I was in HR.
You couldn't even recruit somebody when you were at the org. Now you're just, that's your whole job. Just bring your people.
Mark. Rub it in. Why don't you, honey?
No, I'm not criticizing Catherine's skills. No, I'm criticizing their job placement techniques.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was just like, oh, she's gung-ho and high toned, and you know, she gets things done. So okay, put her in there.
You also need somebody that can talk to people.
Yeah.
You can't put a guy, you know, like somebody in Treasury who can't even, you know, say hello when you walk by and they're like down in their calculator. Yeah. You need somebody who can walk around and talk to people and stuff like that. So what was your main activity that what's the thing that took up the most amount of your time that you did all the time?
Walking around on my own little 2 feet and passing out promo.
So passing out flyers to come in for a personality test.
That was what I spent a majority of my time on. And then I'd get other staff or other Div 6 staff to come with me or whatever, or public, or, but it was mostly just my own little 2 feet.
By the way, what was that like going from being in the C organization in the LA area in a more high control environment, right? That's fair to say.
Oh yeah.
To now being in Columbus, Ohio. This, I'm guessing this was your first time to Ohio.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was my first time out of LA since 1997.
What was that like?
I actually loved it. I actually loved it. I loved getting out of LA. I hated LA. Ugh, yuck. Anyway.
Well, the other thing
getting
is
out of LA. I love being like, Columbus is kind of pretty. You know what I mean? It's nice. It's boring compared to like where I am now or compared to Colorado. It's so boring, but it's so much better than LA.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is when you're in LA in the Sea Org, you're usually in a dorm or there's like a lot of people crammed into small, like, you know, a normal dorm could have four guys in one room, like two sets of bunk beds. So you, when you went to Columbus, they didn't have Sea Org, they had to have apartments or something.
Yeah, right? We were in apartments and it was as per the lease agreement, they could only have four people per apartment. And there was two bedrooms in the apartment, and there was a living room and a kitchen. So it was like living in the real world.
Yeah, because you're not
three other people.
Yeah, you're not having to share a shower with 30 other gals in the morning or at night, or, you know, in the complex, they have communal. They still have communal showers at the complex, right?
No, Yeah.
And bathrooms.
I lived at the complex at one point and I hated it.
Okay. So you're in an apartment, you're in Ohio, you're passing out flyers. Should we show the map of where all this kind of stuff was? Because
let's show it.
Okay, good. Let's do this. Okay, so let's make sure we've. Let me see if I've got this right, folks. You know, I'm not. There it is. Okay, good. Okay, so United States is where all this took place. For any of those folks out there that don't know what we're talking about, that's the United States. And this is where Columbus, Ohio is. Shagoosh right there. And then I just highlighted, so this is where the org was, right? Let's see.
Oh, and by the way, when we flew to Columbus, in order to save money, they flew us into Pittsburgh. They flew us into Pittsburgh. And then we had someone drive us from Pittsburgh to Columbus so that they could save a couple bucks on airfare.
How long of a drive is that?
It was like a 6-hour drive.
It's so weird because you have to rent a van or you have to, or did they just pick up? Well, I guess it's 100 people. They probably, was it buses or how did they do that?
It was like in waves. They didn't send everybody at the exact same time.
It wasn't just like Tuesday, 100 people showed up. It kind of trickled in over a week or two.
I was with like 10 other people and they had to do two trips because of our luggage. So they did the first trip all the way there. And then we waited in the airport and then they did the second. I was on the second trip.
Oh, like another flight.
It was like 4 hours. I think it was like 4 hours.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
But you had to wait for them to drop the first round off and then come back.
And then come back. Yeah.
Wow.
And they could have just flown us into Columbus.
Right.
It was so dumb. So dumb.
Okay. Yep. So here's the org. This is the Columbus org. Now, I want to say this is just because when all these new organizations that we show, there's some sort of L. Ron Hubbard policy that says the org needs to be where there's people. Like there needs to be like foot traffic.
High traffic.
Yeah.
All these new organizations I've seen, they're all like in business parks or just
that's
like,
right. That's
what
right.
Are some and, of the and, things
and,
around
and you know, one of the arguments for that org is that the public were apparently surveyed and they were all pissed off that there was no parking downtown. And so this org has three levels of parking. Isn't that fantastic?
Wow. Oh, so the part of the organization is a parking lot or just?
Yeah.
Just
if you look right under the org, you can see, you can see that's a parking lot. To the right of the org is also the org's parking lot. Both of those.
When you say three levels, it just means three different parking places. There's three sections.
That's what I mean.
Okay. So then when you say you passed out flyers, you told me a few different places. Well, first of all, here, let's just see where you're.
Let me just say one other thing about the org because we were talking about this. So around this org is, okay. So across the street is a TV station. Right next to the org, right next to the org is an air conditioning repair place. And there's all these like specialist medical type places around. There's nothing that anyone's going to go to unless they specifically have an appointment or they work at the TV station or, you know what I mean? It's not like people are just walking down the road and they're like, oh, Scientology. And
there's not even sidewalks.
There's no sidewalk.
Yeah. So what foot traffic is it going to be?
There's no foot traffic.
And by the way, we should comment on the fact that the reason that the organization is supposed to be in a high traffic place is so you can body route people into the organization. Like, go out, hey Joe, come on in, come take a personality test, come with me right now, and walk them in the door. Right?
Yeah,
that's right.
So that's the thing I was going to show. So you mentioned some places that you'd go to, because if the organization is not where the people are, then somehow you got to get to
you
got to
get the people,
and then you got to get them there. So
you got to get the people to the organization.
You said you went to this like a college campus that was nearby.
Yeah, that's OSU or
Ohio
State University. Yeah,
and so basically, this whole area, pretty much the whole map here, is the campus or the stadiums and the sports.
Yeah, I mean it goes for blocks and blocks, and then they own so much property in Columbus, you wouldn't believe it. It's like, it's even more than what you're showing right there, because they own a bunch of agricultural places for agricultural stuff, and it's huge.
Wow. Okay, it's so like, you just, it's like, walk OSU, around that place and pass out.
Yeah, it's like OSU owns half of Columbus, and I think Nationwide Insurance owns the other half.
Wow.
That's what it seems like.
So you would just pass out flyers. Like, would you Oh,
where'd I go?
Lost you. I think you killed your camera.
We hear you. We just can't see you. There you are. Sorry.
So you just passed. What kind of flyers did you pass out?
Okay. So there were special flyers made specifically for Columbus that were apparently surveyed, but it doesn't seem like they were surveyed because people were almost never interested in them.
Yeah. When you say surveyed, Scientology has this thing. It's called the Survey Network. Do they still have the Survey Network?
They do, but it's kind of non-existent.
Scientology believes if you put out a promotional material, it needs to be based on what the people are want or need in that area. And so they have people do surveys to find out what they need and what they want. And then Scientology has to kind of mold their messaging and their promotion to match that. So you'd pass out personality tests or free film tickets or what?
Yeah, film tickets. And then like these handouts that would tell somebody to come in and like check out Scientology or whatever. And then we had promotion for Dianetics, come and see a Dianetics film or get the book, or come in to take a personality test. Like, we had these posters that had little tear off sheets on them where you could call in and then come in and take a personality test.
Wow.
All that type of stuff. Yeah.
And what was, I mean, I know what the answer is going to be, but what was the main reaction that you get to handing these people these small pieces of paper?
It was everything up and down the tone scale.
Yeah. But no, but I mean, like, what are they doing?
It was everything from, okay, to like, nope, that's a cult. To, all right. A lot of people would just take it, but then you watch them and they like throw it away. Like, you turn your head and watch them and they like put it in the trash and just
don't pass out,
put it in their pocket, and you never hear from them again. Or we would go out sometimes and go and try to get appointments for people to come in for testing, for personality testing.
Yeah. And
people just would bullshit you. They'd be like, oh yeah, this is cool. This sounds cool. Okay, I'll come in. Okay. Never hear from them again.
Yeah. So they basically
never call, never answer their phone. Yeah. And I got so many of those, and I was all excited at first. I'm like, oh, these people are so nice and they're going to come in. And nobody would come in. And the staff over testing were like in trouble all the time because people weren't coming in.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Yeah. So then
really bad.
You do it at the campus. One of the other places that you said you did it at was,
and is this something, by the way, that you would do every day? Like every day?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, every day I would, either except on Thursday, Every day I would either be doing promo, I would be around doing promo, and then a couple days out of the week, usually on the weekend, I would be around with another person selling books. So I was out either around Columbus or around other, we went to all these other little towns all over Ohio. Wow. Selling books.
So you had a lot more freedom all of a sudden. You were out in the world.
Yeah, I got to talk to real people.
Yeah, nice. You kind of were getting acclimated to the real world by this assignment sort of introduced the whole world to you, essentially, because you never went out. I mean, in Hollywood, in L.A., you walking down the streets and stuff like that, but you're not just by yourself all the time.
For hours on end.
And report in and you're in trouble and people yelling at you. And why haven't you done this?
I was out so much. And usually I was with at least one other person, but I was actually a pretty trusted person. And after a while, especially after the whole COVID thing, I was out by myself more and more and more, and nobody really cared. And HCO kind of just looked the other way and nobody cared that I was out by myself. So that facilitated things quite a bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now tell me about this Nationwide Arena place. What was going on?
Oh, so Nationwide. Okay. So they do hockey games there all the time. And so we would go, I would round up like 10 staff or as many people as I could get to be out for like an hour or two. And we would go and hand out flyers and personality tests and all sorts of stuff. Before the games, and sometimes we go after the game, so we'd hit people twice. So you'd have all these tons of people coming in, and you just hand out flyers, and then it got to be really demoralizing for me personally because I was out so much, and when you have people just like, some people would get super antagonistic, be like, "No, I don't want that. Get away from me." And you'd be like, "Okay."
Because you don't know. Because you don't know, right? You don't know anything bad about Scientology. You only know we're trying to save the world here, guys.
Yeah, exactly. And anybody who thinks otherwise is either a suppressive person or they're a potential trouble source who's connected to a suppressive person, or they just don't know how great Scientology is,
or they've been given false information. Right. Yeah. Exactly. But what were you going to say? I was going to say one time
after we handed out a whole bunch of handouts before the game, and like everybody was in the game. So it was like all empty in the streets. And I happened to walk over and see the trash can that was right next to the door. And there were so many flyers in there.
So that you were giving people, they were in the garbage.
It was just like, great. So then, but it still counted on my stat. You know what I mean? Well, I put it into someone's hand, so they at least saw it for a second. But I was just like, God, there's so what many. What was your these
stat?
Things.
When we say stat, that means statistic. What was your stat?
It was number of it was Division 6 promo, which basically means how many individual pieces were gotten out,
mailed out, or handed out.
Handed out or posted, like as in posters. And then I had something separate for ads that I ran in the newspaper and things like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So really you just had to hand out more and more pieces each week to get your statistics up. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So that's right. So how many would you hand out in a week?
In a week, it was up to like, When we did a game, it was up to like 10,000, 10 or 15,000.
Wow. In
a week. Yeah. If we had a game that week. Yeah.
Okay.
On a non-game week, it was a little bit less than that. I could do between 5,000 and 7,000 myself.
Wow.
And how long did you do this for?
Oh, like how many months?
Yeah.
I did it from November 2019 to June 2021. Yeah, with COVID in between all that and not going out for a while because of COVID.
So, but we're talking about hundreds of thousands of flyers. You handed out.
Yeah. Wow.
Do you know that anybody came in?
There were a few people that came in, but it was a very few. But Scientology also has this thing.
Four? 10?
From the flyers directly? I actually don't know.
Well, you said one janitor came
there,
in from
yeah,
the
yeah, there
college.
Was one. Okay, from the stuff that we did at the university, there was one guy that came in, one janitor guy that came in. But Scientology does this thing where they're like, you know, outflow equals inflow. And so if I was out all day doing promo and they randomly had four people walk into the org, they would.
Yeah, that cosmically was because
that.
Of you.
Yeah, they correlate that with me being out. True. So I'm like, okay, let me keep going out more than.
keep going. It doesn't matter that they're ending up in the trash. Just keep going.
Outflow equals inflow. That's right. That's a huge thing.
Yeah.
The number of letters out and what is it? The number of particle, no, the size of a mailing list and the number
size of the mailing
sent
list.
To it.
Number of mailings sent to it and
the amount of new people coming into
That's right.
Holy moly, why do we remember that? Okay.
And outflow is holier, more remunerative, more
something. There's a lot. These are all L. Ron Hubbard policy quotations that we're doing about why Scientology needs to cut down all of the force in the universe in order to send out. That's the other thing. This is all printed matter. So they're mailing things and they're passing things out. No, I just before we talk about how you ended up get GTFO and eventually there was this one thing that you told me that you would go to this street. And I just want to show this because this is the most crazy thing. You said you would go to this place called the Happy. Is that the one?
Happy Greek. Yes.
Happy Greek. It was the beginning of High Street. So High Street is kind of like, it's called all these like, hip shops and places and restaurants and like it's kind of like the cool place in town.
Yeah.
So there tended to be a lot of people there before COVID and before the riots. After the riots, it was really messed up.
Yeah.
But before that, it was really nice. So there's a lot more people there than downtown or other areas or whatever. So I would start where that little tag is. I would start a few blocks south of that, and then I would walk.
The highway is there.
Yeah, I would walk all the way down that street, that's High Street, all the way to the university, handing out promo.
Wow. So just literally that whole way. Yeah. How long does that
great.
Take?
I got so much walking in. It was awesome.
And how long is that? That's like hours, right?
It took like a good hour or so to walk.
Wow.
Maybe a little
just time. Passing out flyers and walking.
I loved it. I loved walking all over the place. It was great.
Wow. Okay, so now where you in relation to where the org was, so that's kind of where everything lays out there.
Yeah.
Trying to think here. Okay, so yeah, so and how would you get to the campus?
I would go either well, my senior actually had her own car. So she would drop me off a lot of the times. And sometimes I'd get like a public Scientologist to go with me and they'd come and pick me up. Or there was a few staff that had cars that would take me.
Yeah, you didn't drive. You didn't have a driver.
No, I didn't know how to drive at that point.
Okay. So you had no driver's license. So if you needed to get somewhere, you had a call, you had a phone.
I had a phone on and off.
Well, but how do you tell somebody to come pick you up if you can't call them?
If you're out of the org, generally they give you a phone, but I would just use my iPod and I would text with Text Now or I would call with Text Now because there's Wi-Fi all over the place, especially on the OSU campus.
Yeah.
There's university Wi-Fi that reaches all over the place, like wherever you are.
But with an iPod, I've heard this. This is a kind of a controversial thing within the C organization because in Los Angeles, they didn't allow C org members to have Apple devices because there's certain kind of filters that you can't install on an Apple device, but you can on an Android phone.
They wouldn't let you have an iPhone specifically, but a lot of people had iPods, at least even when I was in LA. And it kind of came in waves. Like everybody would get devices and it'd be easy to get a phone for a while. And then they clamp down and be like, why do all these people have phones? Take all the phones away. Inspect everyone's devices.
But computers, Sea Org members that bought their own phone and have their own thing. That's not the Sea Org's not paying for it.
Yeah.
You're talking about just personal cell phones.
I'm talking about just personal stuff. And actually you weren't allowed to have in LA, you're not allowed to have a non-org phone. If right. you're if you have a phone for your post, it's issued by the org. It's connected to their network. They have a whole thing. They don't allow you access to the internet. It has the filters. Yeah.
And they can check the phone records and all that. Like even when we were still there, if a parent, for example, would send a phone into their son or daughter, it would get confiscated because it was not a device owned and controlled by the organization.
That's right. Yeah. You weren't supposed to have an outside phone.
That's a very that was key. Like
big no no. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very and key I, and thing I want to say. I want to make sure people know.
I bet since I was able to leave with an iPod the way I did, I bet for a while they clamped down on devices in general, like quite a bit. Outlawed them or something. I don't know what happened.
iPods now are antique pretty much.
Yeah, you can't even they're not you can't buy that. You can't buy a new iPod anymore. I'm pretty sure they've been discontinued, which sucks.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because, one that has a screen that you can go on the internet.
Yeah.
Now they're just little music players, the ones I think they still have. Okay,
so they expect everyone to get an iPhone. It's like, why would you want to get something that doesn't have a phone connected?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of silly at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, so the org. So you got the Scientology Columbus, Ohio org. So how would you get from your apartment? Oh, so we didn't show your apartment. This is where your apartment was. And that actual little marker is actually the apartment.
Yeah, that's my apartment. Like
that is right where she lived. And so how would you get from the apartments to the organization?
There was a van that would pick everybody up and take them home. It'd be like two or three runs for, I mean, the more staff we had, the more runs there was. So it'd be like scheduled bus runs, and it was only like a 10-minute drive. So it's right there.
But it would just shuttle people back and forth. Yeah. So if you were at the org for the day, if you couldn't just go home whenever you wanted, how late did you have to work at the org till?
We worked at the org until like 10:30 or so, but that was just the regular staff. Like a lot of the executives ended up staying up really late doing God only knows what, trying to work out personnel and how to transfer who. Plus as time went on, they wanted people back in LA. Like they wanted certain people to be like, this person needs to be replaced and come back to LA. And so the org would have to work that out, how to do that. Like I almost ended up being trained and posted as a supervisor, which I'm really glad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
It almost did though. That was about to happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're passing out flyers. You got your apartment. You're going, what time did you go in the morning?
8:30.
Okay. So 8:30 AM to 10:30 PM. And then 7 days a week, or do you guys have like clean, you know, where they have a thing in the Sea Org called CSP, clean ship program. That's when you're supposed to wipe down your dresser and make your bed.
Do your laundry.
We had that Sunday night.
You had it Sunday. So what time did you go home on Sunday?
Supposed to go home at like right at dinner time, which is 6 o'clock.
And then you get the rest of the night off to do
laundry and stuff. I think people started to get liberties like around the time I before I left. There was a few few things like that going on because at first it started off with, excuse me, one second. Mm-hmm. Give me one.
I'll explain what liberties is. So in the Sea Organization, when you join the Sea Organization, there's a policy called liberties, a Sea Org flag order written by L. Ron Hubbard that says every other week you're allowed to get a day off if your statistics are up and you do what's called a completed staff work to your senior. And depending on what organization you're in, it has to go all the way up to the commanding officer. And then that person would approve the people that it would be allowed to take a Sunday off or a Saturday off or whatever. It depends on what the organization
is. You know, they changed that at some point. Sorry.
They changed it
at some point to the org stats also had to be up.
What?
That's hardcore. Right. Okay. So it used to be if your personal statistic was up, then you were good to go. So what Catherine is saying is that if you were, you did more this week than last week, but the organization did less overall, then you couldn't get a liberty. That's hard.
Why do you get off when the org stats are down? Like, we're not doing liberties this week.
Wow. So like if you're the janitor and you cleaned everything and it's all sparkly and beautiful, but the income is down, you would no longer get a day off.
That's right. That's
wow.
Right.
And so Catherine, did you ever have a day off during the time you were in Columbus?
In Columbus? No, actually, I was just remembering how they did this, because what they did instead of letting people have a day off, a few people took a day off, but they would do org awards, which means they would have a part. They'd have a movie and ice pizza. Cream and blah 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 during like the last couple hours of the night on Saturday night.
The way to a senior member's heart is through donuts and pizza.
Yeah, pizza party! Yay!
I tell you, I've been to so many Sea Org installations around the world, and you can get pretty much anybody to do anything if you give them enough donuts and pizza.
Yeah, I think we'll have to do another episode, Catherine, with you just talking about COVID. But for now, I think we have to get to the details of your actual escape.
You can't say that on YouTube anyway. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to delete that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a bad word.
Delete what?
COVID.
C word. Oh my gosh.
Really?
Just cut it all out.
Anyway. Okay, so you're working there every day. You're not getting any days off. So what happened? So something happened where you were like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. What was that?
Okay, so it was pretty much, well, first there's a lockdown because of the C thing.
The C word, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lockdown. So that meant that everybody stayed at the apartments except for a few staff who lived in the org for many months.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
You would say, whoa. I just said, uh-huh. Staff lived in the org, like they slept there?
Yep. The executive director, the DSA, the flag rep, and the FBO lived in the org.
The flag banking officer and the flag representative, the executive director, and the director of special affairs, the OSA dirty tricks guy, they lived
had to stay
at the org.
In the org to keep the org secure.
Wow.
And what does that mean? Where did they sleep? Is it an office?
They brought in mattresses from the apartments. They set up the whatever office they set up for sleeping. They took showers in the Purif. They lived there.
That is the most crazy thing I've heard from an org story.
They did that in every single org. Every single org had to do that. They had to have staff stay in the org.
Oh, so that somebody doesn't break in during the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So it's like
that the org is being kept secure.
Oh my gosh. So you're not saying they were there because they needed to be there more. They were living there because they're afraid someone's going to break in the middle of the night and steal stuff.
That's right. Or break in during the day. Like, no one was there for months. The building was closed. It was closed to the, it was totally closed. Like, nobody was allowed to come in.
So, I see. So they just lived there. But when COVID stopped, they moved back.
Yeah. Yeah, they came back to the apartments. Once the org opened in stages, like first first staff started going in there for part of the day, and then a lot of staff started going in all the time, and there was still some at the apartments. It was like different things happening. And then at one point everybody was in the org, but the org wasn't opened. And then we were able to open the org.
So what did you do when you couldn't go there?
So what they did is everyone ended up getting a phone so that they could contact public.
Wow, Colin.
Yeah, most people just bought their own or whatever. Like, I bought my own phone because I needed access to the internet and I needed to do ads. Yeah. I was doing book ads and doing different things with promo.
So you had a good excuse to have a phone.
I did. Well, I thought I did until I thought I had a good excuse. So everybody was doing call-in. They were regging for the IAS, International Association of Scientologists, where you just donate money to become a new level of member.
Regging in Scientology is when you get money from people.
Yeah.
And they call that, the registrar is the person responsible. Yeah. And they call it regging.
So they were doing that, and they were signing people up for courses. They had this whole thing going on, extension courses, which is just a course somebody takes at home. Like, they read a book and they do lessons from the book. So they were doing a lot of that. And they were doing it all by phone. So almost everybody had a phone.
But like, you're talking about 100 people calling just anybody and everybody. Not, did they have to live in Columbus, or just that their name was on the list?
Oh, they started regging people outside of Columbus, because you're talking about Sea Org members who knew people all over the world. Like, these people were like on missions, and they've been around in different orgs, and they've been to Flag, and they've been like all over the place. So this is this was a very unusual org where you had like people who knew public all over the place. So they ended up wrenching people from all over the world.
Oh my goodness. So Which wasn't really fair.
It wasn't really fair to the local orgs. It's just like, why is Columbus wrenching my guy?
Right.
Yeah, just because they knew. Yeah. It's because it was somebody who knew somebody.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. So that's all going on. And then, so what was the thing? What happened? There must have been some kind of singular event, which was like, oh, it's time to GTFO.
So, okay. Well, there was a few things. So one thing is that I ended up in the ER with gallstones.
Oh, wow.
In the middle of COVID.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, before that, I set up an illegal Facebook account, and I actually set it up for a good reason at the time. I set it up.
I love how she was in a cult that wouldn't let her leave, and she's justifying how she did something on the internet.
I'm being kind of what's the word?
Tongue in cheek. Yeah, there you go. Okay, you don't have to. It's totally okay that you set up a Facebook account.
I know. I like to joke about it.
Yeah.
So I set this up because I wanted to see other orgs' Facebook accounts and see what they did on their promotion. I'm like, I'm going to make our Facebook account really cool, and I'm going to come up with all these ideas. So I set this up. And then a few days after I set up, I was like, hey, I can find some old friends of mine. This is cool. Nice. I'm going to see if I can find anybody.
The internet strikes again.
Yes. Right?
Exactly. And so I found somebody who's now in the room right there.
Well, don't spoil the surprise. you connected with a childhood friend from Oregon.
Yeah. I found somebody who I originally had met in high school when I was in Oregon going to school before I joined staff in Portland.
Okay. So when you were like 13, 14 years old.
I was 15.
So you hadn't had any contact with this person in 27 years.
That's right.
Wow. That's mind blowing.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. So you start chatting with this person.
Yeah. So we start chatting and we start talking like pretty much every day because we used to be good friends and we just started talking just all the time. And then I had my ER experience. It took them 5 days to bring me to the hospital after my first gallbladder attack. It took them 5 days. I had to have like three more before before they actually were like, okay, I guess we should see what's going on, because they were petrified about somebody being sick during COVID and they're going to get in trouble and all this stuff. They're like, no, we don't want to do that.
Well, just a tiny backstory. In Scientology, if you get sick, that means that you're either a potential trouble source or you've done something that's out ethics, period. There's no way around it. So if you get sick, you're a potential trouble source. That means there is a suppressive person in our midst.
Right.
So it's a big deal if you get sick in Scientology, and especially in the Sea Org. And that's a whole nother level of scrutiny if you just get ill, even if you just get a cold. It doesn't matter. If even gallstones, anything, you did something.
We didn't know what it was until I went to the ER and got an actual diagnosis from a doctor. Anyway. And at first the doctor missed it too. And then they decided to do some other tests and then they found it.
Wow.
Okay. So you're in the hospital, and then what happens?
Yeah. So I'm in the hospital. I get surgery. I get my whole gallbladder taken out after, like, you know, never having surgery in my life, never being under any anesthetic, never anything. This whole like dramatic thing happens within a few days. And then I go back, I get like a week to kind of rest up. And then people started, this is around the time when people started going back into the org. And so we started going back into the org. And meanwhile, I couldn't sleep. I would go to sleep. I would wake up at like 1 a.m. and I would be up until like 6 or 7. And I just couldn't sleep. And then I tried to go back to sleep. And then it became a thing of, oh, you can't sleep in. You have to get up. And I was like, I can't sleep. I need to sleep. And this went on for actually a couple months, and it went on after I was in the org and everything. And I couldn't sleep properly for a long time. And they wouldn't let me sleep in, which was just so stupid. It was so stupid because at first nobody was even in the org. We were at the apartments. So why not let me sleep?
Right.
I was like,
but you're basically, your body is in some kind of shock or trauma from the whole surgery thing. Cause you've never, ever been to the hospital before, right? I mean, you didn't have a surgery.
I'd never had surgery before. I'd seen doctors and stuff. I never had any major surgery, never broken a bone, never been under any sort of anesthetic, never anything. So I was just like electrified about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I also think that the anesthesia affected like my short-term memory a little bit at one point, because I got in trouble for having these book ads running with some money from the NANI campaign, and the ED was all like pissed off, and she was screaming at me, and she's asking me about some emails that I sent.
But you slipped into crazy talk abbreviation.
I'm sorry.
The executive director didn't want you to spend money that was crazy from the non-existence campaign.
Yeah,
and so you were spending, you basically were spending promotional money that was just
on promotion,
significant for something else, just another promotion.
While the org was closed, I was promoting, and that was a problem.
Why was that a problem?
It was a financial irregularity.
Oh, so my goodness. Wow.
They love that one. That's how they got
me. That's their favorite.
So there was a little bit of nonsense happening.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is that I think I had a problem with my short-term memory from the anesthetic, because I was like, I can't remember what I said in these emails. And I was trying to explain this to her, right? And she was just saying, oh, don't blame your body problems on me.
I get it. So she's basically saying you're using your body problems as an excuse.
Yeah, you're using this as an excuse to just lie. And I was like, no, I'm not. I really actually can't remember. And that was one of the things that really kind of started to tip me over a little bit, because I was like, are you kidding me? I'm like, I just had major surgery.
Right.
Like, give me a break.
Completely.
Anyway,
that's so crazy. So then what, then it's something, wasn't there something with the phone? You had a phone and then they didn't.
Yeah. Okay. So what happened was, okay, let me see if I can tell a short version of this. What happened was my roommate, was talking to a public Scientologist who's actually in Colorado, by the way, kind of funny. Mm. She was talking to a public Scientologist who was like, this guy was a little bit unstable, and he was like completely in love with her. And she kept trying to say, no, don't send me stuff. Oh, I want to send you a birthday present. No, don't send me anything. She's like trying to help the guy, but at the same time trying to be like, no, don't do anything. And so at one point he threatened to, how do you have to say it? He threatened to unalive himself.
Oh, if she wouldn't have a relationship with
him? Something like that. He's like,
he was a Sea Org member in Columbus?
No, he wasn't a Sea Org member. He was a public.
But she was a Sea Org member.
She was a Sea Org member. She was my roommate, which is how I know about all this.
I see. And the person in Colorado was a male that she was trying to have a relationship with.
She wasn't trying to have a relationship. She was just trying to sell the guy a book or a course or something. And he was like, I really like you. And yeah. So then he made that threat, and she freaked out and went to tell somebody and be like, what do I do? And then she got in a bunch of trouble. And her whole phone was inspected, and she got like, she got in a lot of shit because the guy had threatened this. So she gets in trouble, right? Makes sense.
Oh my gosh.
But she was chatting with him or talking to him outside of organization channels, right?
No. Yeah, well, yeah, it was being done on the phone, but she was legitimately talking to the guy as like a public guy who's like paying for courses, buying books. I guess.
But he wanted more like than that.
Yeah, exactly.
But okay, so like you said, that was made into being her fault.
Yeah,
exactly. That was her fault. She got in so much trouble because she must have 2D flowed him, which just means like she must have flirted with him. And she was a bit of a flirt, but yeah.
Okay, so she got in all this trouble.
So as a result, so her phone was taken, and then, all the phones were taken for inspection. Oh my goodness. Everybody was told to turn in their phones the next day. I knew about it ahead of time because she was my roommate, and my other roommate.
So you wiped yours clean.
Yeah, so I wiped everything. So I've been talking.
Burn it down. Catherine's like, I got to burn this thing down. It's coming.
I've been talking to my friend. I deleted all our texts. I deleted emails. I totally cleaned it out. Right.
Yeah.
I didn't delete everything because that would have looked suspicious. I just deleted those just particular deleted conversations. The
stuff they might not want to see, like chatting with your Facebook friend, stuff like
that. Yeah, that's right. I deleted all that. So we were told to turn in our phones. We weren't told to turn in all of our devices. So I still had my iPod, mm-hmm. which I never turned in. Yeah. So I turned in my phone and I expected to get it back the next day. It was like, whatever. I use it all the time for what I'm supposed to be doing. And I expected to get it back. So the next day I get told, you can't have your phone back because you're talking to random LA Sea Org members, because I had friends in LA that I talked to, and especially after my surgery and stuff, I was like talking to people and telling them what happened. Exactly. So it's like all these you're talking to all these LA Org or LA Sea Org members, and you don't need to be doing that. You don't need your phone. And I was like, what do you mean? I have to have access to the internet to do my job. We're stuck in the apartments, so they took my phone that I paid for. That I paid for the plan, everything.
It was your personal cell phone, mm-hmm. and the phone was yours, and you were paying for the cell.
That's right. I just paid for another month of service, and it was just about to be wasted. It was just a little Android phone.
Okay, but they wouldn't even let you have it at all. Mm. Wow. Okay, so then what happened?
So then, and actually, looking back on it now, it may have been because they didn't want her to have access to a phone or something. She's my roommate. I don't know exactly what they were thinking, or just a limit.
You were catching shrapnel from her nonsense. Yeah, exactly. And then you were going to lose your phone. So then what happened after that?
So then I used my iPod and I had access to Wi-Fi because my other roommate had a hotspot for a little while. And I told my friend what was going on because I was so mad that they'd taken my phone.
You told the friend you were chatting with on Facebook. He was not in Scientology.
That's right.
He was not in the series.
Not a Scientologist.
He was outside world person.
Yeah. He was a real world person.
And never had any involvement with Scientology.
That's right. Except for being friends with me.
That's right. And so, but, and you, were you telling him anything that was going on with you, or was this when that started?
That's when that started, because I was so mad that my communication had been cut off so thoroughly, and I was cut off from doing my job. I was so angry. I was like, I'm just going to tell him what happened. I'm going to see how he reacts when I tell him this. So I told him, and he's like, so it was your personal phone? Yep. I paid for the plan, bought the phone. So it was your property. So they stole your property. I'm like, no, it's not really like that. Right. It's not really like that.
That's exactly what it is.
So I kind of tried to say some of that, but at the same time, I was really mad that they'd taken it. So I'm telling him, like, I want to change something. I'm sick of this. I'm really tired of this. I'm getting really fed up. And meanwhile, he's like, think, oh, good, good, good. And I started telling him more and more. And I started telling him, you know, they won't let me sleep. And I just got the surgery. And I just started telling him more and more what was going on with me and the fact that I just wasn't happy where I was. And yeah.
And so then what happened?
So
what
then, did he say? Well, he said a lot, but he started, he would talk about like, okay, so in an abusive relationship, this is what happens, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, when they traffic people, when people are trafficked, this is what happens, blah, 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 blah. He didn't say you've been trafficked.
That's what's happening to you. Scientology. He was just giving you examples.
He's just giving me comparisons and being like, it sounds to me like you're being abused. Do you feel like you're being abused? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. No, yes, no, yes. But
By the way, as an interesting comment, that response, I don't know, is a marker for law enforcement, doctors, and so forth. When someone says, I don't know, it's a known flag for you're covering up.
That makes sense.
Because otherwise, any normal person, I mean, if you asked me that right now, I'd be like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Same right? here. I'm like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not at all. I have a great,
if
I have a
you
great
don't
life.
Know, then they go, this person is wondering if they're being abused, or they're wondering if they're
or they're covering up for the abuser by just saying, I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Anyway,
because you don't want to say no because you feel like shit. You don't want to say yes because then it's like, okay, now I have to explain what's going on. Oh, this is going to be detrimental to Scientology. People are going to get in trouble. This might harm Scientology.
Right.
Yeah.
Such a weird thing.
Yeah.
That you're literally, you're the victim and you're the one that's working and all this and for nothing really for cents an hour. And you're trying to not get them in trouble.
Right.
That's literally your whole world is how not to get in trouble yourself and how not to get them in trouble.
Yeah. You don't want to get them in trouble.
And so from this point, what was the timeline to your GTFO moment?
So I started talking to him in April. I got my surgery in May. We went back. Everybody went back into the org at like the end of June, sort of beginning of July, or maybe it was mid-July, beginning of July, everybody went back into the org. The org was still closed. Nobody was going out. I was running ads and trying to do whatever I could without being able to go out and do promo. And then that's when they had told me, oh, we might transfer you to training, go into training to be a supervisor. I'm like, okay. And then that didn't happen. And then we started getting okay to go out again and do promo and do books and stuff and sell books. I mean, so then I started being out again. And because there was so as a sort of going along with the whole COVID thing, people, if they were exposed to anybody who had symptoms or who was found to have the illness, they would be quarantined for 2 weeks or whatever it was. It kept changing. The rules kept changing all the time. But so you'd have a large amount of the staff in and out of quarantine, like all the time. So it was really hard for me to find somebody to go out with to do promo because everybody was like, I can't. I just got back from quarantine, or they were in quarantine, or they didn't want to go out because they didn't want to get sick. And there's all these protocols you had to follow if you're going to be out, and you had to come back and take a shower and clean your clothes with Decon 7 and all this crap you had to do if you were out of the org, right?
Scientology had that Decon 7 sprayers and then spacesuits and all kinds of craziness.
Yeah, there. We need to do another one just on that.
We do.
That whole thing. Yeah.
We do.
You won't believe it. Anyway. So then, I finally was just like, okay, I'm going to go by myself. And I told my senior, there's no one to go with me. I'm just take me to OSU. I'll do a whole bunch of promo by myself. She's like, okay, you're not really supposed to go by yourself. And then it became a thing where I would just go by myself.
So all these other times you were going with multiple people.
I was usually with people. Yeah. I was usually with at least one other person because for security and whatever, then I didn't want people going around by themselves. Plus it's like, it's easier to blow. So
yeah,
because part of it was like, we don't want you going around by yourself, and part of it was like, we don't want it opens up the door to just walking away.
Yeah.
So because I was trusted and whatever, and I didn't have any history with ever blowing or doing anything weird or having any doubts, they would just let me go and kind of look the other way. And so I was out a lot by myself, and I would make sure that I was at OSU like several days a week, all day by myself. So while I was there, I was either talking to my friend or I was watching a lot of things on the internet.
Nice.
And that's where I found Mark and Claire Headley.
Now, what did you watch? Like, well, that's an interesting thing. What if there was one thing that you remembered? Well, first of all, to be clear, I worked at a totally different place than you.
Yeah.
For most of our careers when I was in the C organization for 16 years or so. But sometimes we would go to Los Angeles and eat where you worked and where you would serve the film crew if we were there. We would get food from your department. So you knew who I was.
Yeah, I knew who you were and also knew who Chris Shelton was. And he had a lot of interesting stuff and a lot of interesting stories. And I particularly liked hearing stories and hearing what was really going on at the Int base, because when you're in middle management, which is like right under Int management.
Yeah.
At the time when there wasn't Int management, there's no Int management anymore. But you're like right under that organizationally, you're right under that. So
those are the first batch of people that are subjected to nonsense from David Miscavige, because he tells all the people in Int management, oh, everybody has to do this in all of the Scientology organizations all over the world. And then in middle management, that comes crashing down. Why did this happen? And so a lot of the times we're telling stories about what was happening at the base, the people in all the other organizations are going, oh, that's why that happened.
That's right.
That's why this
there was so much mystery for me connected with certain things that happened over the years where I'm like, what happened with this? So I just started looking things up, specific things that I wanted to know about. And then I just started listening to more and more and more stories, more like escape type stories or like just horror stories from various people that, you know, Chris did a ton of interviews and I listened to a lot of those.
So you knew that there was people who had escaped and they were they were living life again.
Yeah. I knew there was people, but you somehow justify it in your mind of like, okay, well, they must be really unhappy or, you know, they'll never go up the bridge. They'll never achieve OT, blah, blah, blah. But one of the things I found out early on is I found out there was no OT 9 and 10. So when I found that out and when I actually believed it, because I heard it from somebody who heard it from the guy who was working with that type of material, Dan Kuhn. And I was like, I know who Dan Kuhn is. What happened to Dan Kuhn? And I knew that Dan Kuhn had blown because the one of the films that he was in had to be redone. Mm-hmm. And I knew why, because I happened to hear it through the grapevine or whatever that he was gone. And I was like, what happened to Dan Kuhn? Okay, if Dan Kuhn says there's no OT 9 and 10, I believe it. So, okay, cool. So what does that mean? So then that got me thinking about just the whole, you know, going up the bridge. Do I want to continue doing this? And then I saw a couple of videos on the Truth Rundown. And when I saw that and saw and found out what that really was, I was like, I am never going to do that. And for someone who's been, you know, in Scientology and the Sea Org for that many years to say there is auditing that I will never agree to do is pretty major.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and there's no OT 9 and 10. I'm never going to do the Truth Rundown because I'll never have anyone tell me that what I saw is not what I saw.
And so, because you, all these things that you're hearing about in the Sea Org, you hear about them or you know somebody who knew somebody or somebody that used to be in international management just shows up and they're the canteen IC or the dishwasher in Los Angeles. So you see all kinds of things happen, but no one's allowed to talk about it inside the Sea organization. Yeah. If you gossip,
you're not allowed to ask any staff why they're like, you know, in charge of the canteen now or something.
Yeah, right.
It's basically like, if you do that, you're just inviting trouble. So nobody talks about that stuff. You hear little things, or maybe somebody says something and then somebody tells them, hey, shut up. Don't say you can't talk about that. Or it's very hush hush. So you were finding out things that you kind of maybe suspected or knew, and now
new little pieces of, or you just know that somebody disappeared and you're like, where did that person go? You look them up and you see her, their whole story. You're like, oh my God. Okay. Where did this person go? What happened to this person? Why is Chris Shelton such an SP? You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. Wow. So I just started doing more and more of that. And actually, I watched the 2-hour Jason Begay interview, which was great. That was, yes. Oh my God.
You know who shot that?
So good. Didn't Mark Bunker do that?
Mark Bunker. Yeah. Mark yeah. Bunker shot that video. That video got thousands of Scientologists.
It's, it's fantastic. It's just his whole story and the way he tells it and everything. It's just fantastic. It like if that doesn't get somebody to start asking questions or to leave, like, I don't
know what's there's two videos that Jason did that I think were really amazing. He did the video with Mark Bunker. And then when we went to Germany, he did a speech. He basically told a lot of other stuff in a different way. And I'll put links to those two videos below.
I need to see that one too.
Yeah, they're both really good. I mean, he
needs to come on one of these channels.
I know. I talked to him like a week or two ago, and we were chatting about something else. And I asked him, "Hey, when are you coming on?" And he never answered. I was like,
"Oh, come on!"
No, I'm pretty sure NBC does not. He doesn't. Oh, he's got a good thing going. He doesn't need the Scientology trying to jack it up again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so you were watching stuff. Why didn't you leave? What you were still there? What was the thing that was like?
I was trying to resolve in my own mind what I wanted to do, because first it was like, okay, I'm going to leave the Sea Org. Okay, how am I going to leave the Sea Org? But I still want to be a Scientologist. That's what I started with. I'm going to leave because I'm not happy. I want to do something that makes me happy. So then I went from that to like, I don't know if I want to do Scientology anymore. This, especially the Truth Rundown thing and the OT 9 and 10. And maybe I don't want to do it anymore. Okay. But if I go, where am I going to go? I have a couple thousand dollars in the bank. Not a lot. I have family up in Minnesota that I haven't really talked to, except my 91-year-old grandmother, who I didn't want to, you know, burden with, like, oh, can I come up and stay with you? And I hadn't reconnected to my mom and my sister yet. And that was a whole other.
Yeah. We'll put
huge
a link to
thing.
The,
yeah.
We'll put a link to the other video that Claire did with you, and you guys can hear that whole story. But essentially, just in a nutshell, your mom and your sister, who had also been in Scientology, left. And when they left, they tried to get you out, and you didn't want to leave. And it caused you a lot of internal problems when, if you have somebody outside of Scientology showing up to your building and protesting and going to the media and doing stuff like that, if you're a Sea Org member and that's happening, it could be very traumatic, because you're going to get interrogated and you're going to get possibly beat up and you're going to be abused because you're connected to these people that are suppressives. And it could really, you could lose status, you could lose your job. There's all sorts of nonsense that could happen. And so that happened to you. And so you hadn't talked to them.
That's why I was never allowed to go to go to INT or do anything like that.
Because you were connected to people that were hostile towards science.
Which was a good thing in the end, but
It probably it didn't feel good in the moment, I'm sure.
Okay, exactly. So then
I didn't know what to do or where to go.
You had nowhere to go.
Yeah. And my friend, wanted to help me, but it wasn't really in the position to be like, okay, I don't, you know, I'm not sure how to help you. I'm going to see if I can work something out or something. Maybe you can stay with my sister. We were tossing around different ideas. And I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't even know how I'm going to just leave. Like, I don't want to just leave without any of my belongings, really. You know, I have things I want to keep. I don't know how to do this type thing. So then he found the Aftermath Foundation online. And actually I'd seen the website before and I was just kind of like, no. And then he found it separately and was like, I really think you should ask them if maybe they can help you. I'm like, no, that's a bunch of disaffected suppressive people. I don't want to talk to them. They're scary. No.
It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. I'm glad to hear what your thoughts were. Yeah, and I'm also actually, by the way, really glad to hear that you had seen the website on your own before he mentioned it to you. That's amazing.
I don't remember how I found it, but I definitely remember seeing it. But then I was just like, no. And then I just wanted to see like who was on the board and stuff. I'm like, okay, yeah, I know Mike. I know who Mark is. Okay, I know almost all these people, but no. No, not going to do it.
And so what happened that you changed your mind?
Well, my very good friend talked me into it, basically.
Nice.
And at first I was like, okay, why don't know? Actually, I think maybe you should ask them and don't say anything about me. I don't want them to know where I am or who I am or anything. Cause I was kind of thinking, oh, they just try to get people out of Scientology and, you know, I don't know. I didn't know what the plan was. So then he sent an email. He sent an email, which sounded very suspicious at the time, and it went to Aaron, and Aaron is like, "This sounds really fishy." So you're saying that your friend, who's a SEWRG member, who's out in an org, is talking to you and telling you all this stuff, but you're not a Scientologist. You've never been in Scientology. You don't have anything to do with Scientology, and she's telling all this. Yeah, really? It sounded very fishy. Yep. So then finally he convinced me to send an email. So I sent like a 2-sentence email. Nobody answered me because I'm sure it was like, okay, they probably think this is bogus. So then I sent a more complete email and I got an answer. And then I was like, okay, I want to talk to Mark Headley. So then I was given Mark's number and I started texting Mark.
This is the best.
I started texting him.
I wish I'm debating pulling up the conversation.
No, don't. It's okay.
No. Just because
you have it. You should put it in a document and send it to me because I don't have it anymore. I had to delete everything.
Oh well, either way, essentially we were chatting back and forth, and she was just telling me a little bit about herself without telling me anything, identifying. Yeah. But she sent it. However, she was chatting on her iPod. When you chat on or whatever device it was, it has, if you click on the number, it'll just tell you who that is. And it said, K Olson at Scientology.net or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I thought it was really funny, but then I was like, I don't ever remember a K Olson. And then I just thought to myself, wow, that's weird. And we were still talking back and forth, and I just went K Olson Scientology, and a video of me came up. I thought that's the craziest thing ever. And then I watched the video, and in the video, it was a press conference that we had done at some place in Los Angeles years and years ago.
The really funny thing is that you were doing all this while we were texting.
Yes. Oh yeah. So I'm doing all this while we're chatting back and forth. And then it finally comes, Mark Bunker comes up. Mark Bunker again. I got to tell you guys, Mark Bunker, this is how long Mark Bunker's been around. This was like 15 years ago when this video was. Yeah.
It was 2010. And
there you
that
go.
That video was from 2010. Yep.
So Mark Bunker read a letter from Catherine's mom. Yeah. In the press conference, because she had tried to go and get Catherine out. And it was, I think the thing was, the video might even be, I'll put a link to it, but it's like a letter to Catherine is what he did, or there's other forms of it. But either way.
You know what's funny? I actually saw that when I was still in LA, because I would go and anytime I got access to a non-org internet, I would go and I would search for myself because I wanted to know if anything was happening with me that nobody was telling me about. So I actually saw that video.
Wow.
Anyway, so then I said, okay, that's the only K Olson that I know of in Scientology. And I don't know why I thought you would be. I thought Cincinnati was an org that got a bunch of Sea Org members. Mm. I didn't.
They got a few. Yeah. They got a command.
You explained your whole situation without giving me a location. Then I just thought to myself, let's do this. Because she's not telling me who she is. She's not telling me anything. So part of this is we're trying to help this person, but we're also trying to vet this person. Like, is this a real thing or is this some nonsense? Is this a setup? Because we've had tons of those as well. So we have to be very careful. So I just said, hey, we're chatting back and forth. I said, you don't happen to be in Ohio, do you? And she was like, what the hell? And so then I thought, okay, I've got one more. And I said, your mom's not bloody blah, is she? And so she's been chatting with me this whole time. And she doesn't, she's not said one thing about who or where she is. And then I just said, you happen to be, are you in Ohio? And is your mom this person? And then, so within, I'm going to say 10 minutes, I knew exactly who she was. Even though she hadn't told me anything. And I've done this to other people as well. So don't think that you're being singled out.
And Catherine, what was your reaction to this from Mark?
I was freaked out. I was like, how does he know this? I'm like, okay, this is weird. How does it, okay, this is really weird. Because I was already like all scared about talking to you guys. And I was just,
but then right after that, we just started chatting. I was like, you want to get on the phone or what's up with this? You know, like,
after that, we got on the phone.
At that point, I was just like, cause that's usually,
that's funny. Cause that's one of those days that I walked from down High Street all the way to the university. Cause I talked to you once I got to the university.
Yeah. And then you told me the whole thing. But it was so funny because you were like being very cagey and very careful and everything. And then as soon as I knew who you were like, I was like, you can call me if you want. This is, you know, it's the, this is, we can, let's just talk. Let's just have a conversation. And so then how long was it? I mean, I want to say we talked a lot back and forth and there was a whole bunch of back and forth and then we got Claire involved.
Yeah, we did. So what happened was, so that was on Sunday. Yeah, that was on Sunday because then I had some email, a little bit of email back and forth about the application and stuff with Aaron, but then we were still texting. Like I was texting you back and forth and I was texting with Aaron because you were both asking me, when do you want to go? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe in a month. I was like, I don't know, a month, maybe I'll be ready in a month. Right. But then part of it was you told me like whatever you need, if you need a phone, we can get you a phone. If you need a plane ticket, we can get you a plane ticket. If you need to be picked up, you can be picked up. I'm like, okay, so this is totally, I can decide how this is going to go. Okay. That makes me feel a little bit better. It's not like, oh, so what we're going to do is we're going to come and pick you up and you're going to go here and then you're going to go there. And then this was going to, I didn't want that. I was like, ugh. But there was none of that. It was like, what do you need type thing. So I was like, okay, this is cool. So then I didn't know where I wanted to go. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So then, I think Aaron suggested, well, why don't we get you someplace where you can just chill out for a little while and then decide where you want to go from there. I'm like, okay, that sounds cool. And he's like, do you like the beach or do you like the mountains? I'm like, I like the mountains. So that's how I ended up.
Very convenient that you ended up here. I know. In the mountains. We have the mountains all over the place here. We got all the mountains. We
exactly. So then it was like, okay, so when do you want to go? And I was like, first I said a month. Then I was like, well, maybe I can go next week because then I could go to OSU and so we could pick me up. I'm kind of thinking to myself. And then a bunch of people who were kind of instrumental in maybe being able to stop me and figure out what was going on all went to quarantine. And
wow. DSA, so you had a window. You basically had a 2-week window.
Yeah. The DSA, the both people in the ethics department, and then the person who was over HCO, HR, was on leave in the UK. And like all these people were gone, like at the same time. And I was like,
so basically, there were no Scientology police presence there that could really stop you or even foil an escape because they were just not on. Exactly. They weren't out of commission or gone.
Or that would be most likely to find out that you had something in the works.
Yeah, exactly. And I know the person that would be most likely to find that out, and she was in the UK at the time.
Wow.
Which was great. And I didn't know when she was going to be back. So I'm like, I should go before she's back.
Yep.
And so I was like, okay, so I can leave on a, I can leave on Friday. So I talked to you on Sunday, and then we had some more texts with you and with Aaron and stuff. And then on, and then I was like, okay, so I can go on Friday. So then I had to arrange to go to the university on Friday, like without fail, because I was going to have a plane ticket and I didn't, whatever. I just, once I decided to go, I just wanted to go. I didn't want a bunch of like, cause I was already having, when you're like having to like conceal like so much from people you're around every single day, like every minute of your life, practically you're with somebody and you're, and you know, you have friends and people can be like, oh, are you upset about something or whatever? Right.
Yep.
So having to like,
and that's the other reason we were worried when you said a month, because we know once someone's speaking with us and we're basically trying to help them, that is going to, in Scientology, they teach you, you're indoctrinated to believe that there's tells. If you have, if you're hiding a secret, then you have tells. And, and because you think that, you will have those tells. And then somebody will say, hey, what's going on? So you know you're going to be caught if you do something bad. It's a, it's a kind of crazy brainwashing thing that happens.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that during this whole time, I was getting a particular auditing in Scientology on overts and withholds.
So that's another thing. If you're going in session and you're doing things that Scientology considers nonsense, before every session, they ask you if there's any of that going on. Yeah. And in order to continue the session, you have to tell them what's going on. Otherwise, they will spend the entire, if you're going to be there for 2 hours, they'll spend the entire 2 hours interrogating you about what you're up to. And then you get like kind of red flagged, like this person's up to nonsense. So,
and you know how I got around it in my own mind? I was like, this is not an overt. I'm actually doing something that I want to do. That's going to be beneficial to me and my dynamics,
which is completely true, by the way.
Exactly. This is not an overt. And I was fine. I was like, my auditing was going fine. I went in, you know, right before. Oh, that was the other thing that was going on, is that because I was getting a student auditing. And so the supervisor went to quarantine during that week. He went to quarantine. So I'm like, oh, man, this is so perfect.
It was
like,
a sign.
I'm not going to go in session for at least a week. Like, it's going to be even easier. Like, I need to do it now.
The quarantine fairy was on your side.
That's right. But then what happened was the day before, okay, so after, so Claire sent me the boarding pass on Thursday.
Yep.
And then I was told that evening that I was going to go in session the next day.
Oh, so
we got to do this.
I was like, oh no. So then what am I going to do? Okay, I'll just tell them I'm not sessionable, right? And I ended up like being awake until like 4 a.m. anyway. So I was very validly not sessionable. I didn't get enough sleep to go in session.
To be clear, if you are supposed to get a counseling session or an interrogation in Scientology, they want you to be well fed and well rested, because the interrogation is not very effective if you're tired or hungry. So, to be clear, we got you a boarding pass. A volunteer in the area. So I want to say her name was Ashley. We won't say her last name, but she was a volunteer for the foundation who signed up on the aftermathfoundation.org website and said, if anybody needs a ride to the airport, I'm the one to do it. And so when we went into our database, we went Ohio, and it was like Ashley airport ride. It was like, we're good to go. That's what we need. So we got a volunteer to agree to pick you up.
So I went into the org the next day, and I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not sessionable. I couldn't sleep last night for a while. And it almost turned into like sort of like an ethics thing. Like, why are you sessionable? Blah, blah, blah. But then I smoothed it over and got out of it and whatever. I got out of it, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go to OSU now. Can you give me a ride to my senior? Right. She's like, yeah, okay, I'll go drop you off. So then she drops me off. And as soon as I get there,
your boss is the one who dropped you off to blow.
Dropped me off. That was the last time I saw her. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I felt really bad about her, actually. I know she got in so much trouble. And she's actually my favorite boss I've ever had in the Sea Org. She was a really cool chick. Anyway, so
hopefully she watches this and we'll get it. We'll get
I
her
know, right?
We can get her out too. That would be perfect.
Yeah, I wish. She's I really wish she would. She's very cool. Anyway, so yeah, so then she dropped me off and I immediately went in just a random building because it's so easy just to disappear on that campus. You can go into any building and you can just walk around and no one's going to find you. Like, no one's going to find you if you want to be found on that campus. So I went in a building. I'd activated the SIM card on my phone because I had gotten my phone back by that time, but it wasn't activated. So I got the SIM card activated. And for whatever reason, I couldn't use the phone. So I still had to use my iPod. So I just used the hotspot, whatever, use my iPod. And then I said where I was.
And sorry, by the way, I just want to interject because you were dark for like 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That morning. What happened was I got to the org and then I was on my iPod for a second in my office and the ED walked by and saw me. And then I was like, oh shit, I shouldn't be on this. And I put it away. I took the SIM card out of my phone. I hid everything in different places. I'm just like, I cannot blow this. And I just I didn't talk to anybody the entire time I was in the org. I'm like, nope.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And meanwhile, we're sitting here in Colorado knowing that you're arriving this day. And yeah, all of a sudden it hit me like, oh my gosh, if something happens and for any reason you don't make it, what on earth do we do? Like, who do we know in law enforcement that can help us? Like yeah, right now, today. Anyway, yeah, thank goodness we heard from you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then, so then I just gave the address where I was and she came and picked me up. Terrific lady, by the way. And she took me to the apartments. Do you want to show like where
sure,
on the map where I went?
Well, yeah. Oh yeah. Here we got to put it up. Poof. There you go. So you went, so here, let's do, you were
so from OSU.
So from OSU. Yeah.
So you were over here in your flyer land where you normally go. So it was totally normal for you to go there.
Yep.
So it was a perfect cover. So exactly. Then what time is it when Ashley picks you up?
She picked me up at like, I would say like 12 or something.
Okay. So it's lunchtime.
It was like between 12 and 1.
Okay. And then you go from there, you go over to the apartments. And then you go to get your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I go to finish packing. Oh, and by the way, I'd been packing a little bit every day because when I was out for the day, I had to come back to the apartment before I went to the org. And so I would have a little bit of time. So I started packing.
Nice. So you had you basically had go bags. You had some bags ready to go.
Bit, yeah. Yeah. And then I ripped off a suitcase from my roommate, which I sent her money. I Zelled her money for afterwards. I was like, here's the money for your suitcase. I love you, Molly.
Okay. So you go to the apartment, you get your stuff, and then you go to the airport.
Yeah. I go to my apartment. I pack my stuff. Ashley helps me load the, like, she comes and gets stuff as I'm packing it and puts it in the car. Wow. So I'm not putting stuff in the car, right? She's putting
stuff
in the car.
And also, so if somebody shows up, you've got somebody there with you. Like, oh, this is my aunt's Ashley and she's just helping me. We're going to go somewhere, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I had to do was go from the apartment to the car with my purse. And that's all I had to do.
And nice. Didn't you say you almost ran into some other SEARG members?
Yeah. So I got in the car. I got in the car and we were pulling away from the curb. There's two people coming down the sidewalk in front of us from the org, two SEARG members that I knew because they were in quarantine.
Yeah.
And they're walking down the sidewalk and I'm like, oh shit. But they didn't see me. It was just a random car. It's not like,
wow, that car. So you just saw them walking away and you're like, that's it.
Yeah, we're out. That was the last time. And actually one of them had been my auditor many, many, many times.
Wow.
So
crazy.
She missed it.
Yeah. Okay. So then you went to the airport. And then how long were you at the airport?
Yeah. So then we went to the airport and I was at the airport. I think the flight was at like 4 or something.
Okay. So it was pretty quick. You weren't looking around the airport when you were in the terminal.
Yeah. I was coming. Before I got through security, I was all freaked out and wondering if anyone's going to come. But at the same time, I wasn't, because the thing is the way I set it up is I was supposed to be at OSU for the entire day.
Oh, so they wouldn't even have known you were gone until you were already on the flight.
Yeah. So first they would try to text me and be like, oh, hey, we need to pick you up for this or that. And then if they don't get an answer, try to call, keep trying to text. And I could have always just said, oh, I didn't see it, or it was turned off, or I'm really sorry, I didn't see the text. Like, I could answer like an hour later and say, I'm sorry, I didn't see the text or whatever. So then when I got on the plane, I actually texted the guy who was supposed, I got on the plane. And as soon as I got on the plane, the guy who was supposed to pick me up was calling me because he wanted to find out where to pick me up from in OSU. And I didn't answer him because I'm like, I'm not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
And I texted him and I said, because at the same time, okay, yeah, I'm leaving, I'm escaping. But at the same time, I had friends there, I had people who cared about me. Yeah, I'm just like, I don't want them to get worse. Like, kidnapped and dead or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't need to do that to people. So I'm like, yeah, I need to tell somebody where I am. So I just told him, I'm leaving. This is my own decision. Please tell Angela, that was my senior, tell Angela I'm really sorry, and she's been great, and I love her, and I'm sorry for everything.
and that was it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wild. And so then when you went, and then I guess the next place you went was here. Denver.
Denver, Colorado.
Okay, good. So then, yeah, that was wild. And then did I pick you up? Who picked you up? Did Claire pick you up?
Claire. That was me. Yep. Yeah. I was scoping out the tram exit to make sure there were no strange people and kind of like making sure. And then I remember you walked out and we were both kind of like, huh? And I'm like, here, come on. Let's hug it out. Welcome to Colorado.
I think when the plane landed or right before it took off, I texted you, Mark, and I said, okay, I'm coming. I hope you like me. And he answers me back and says, yeah, I hope you don't suck.
Yes.
Can always count on Mark for a good laugh.
Okay. I would have sucked too.
To be fair, we had talked a lot over the week up until then. So we were being very friendly. I hope you don't suck.
He was trying to lighten the mood.
Yes. Okay. So what was that like? When you got, because basically it once you got surreal. To Denver, it was like, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah, it was totally surreal. Like, I remember the car ride back from the airport to the hotel in Castle Rock. And it was so surreal. Like, I felt like I was in shock. I was like, this is so weird. So I'm in a car with a notorious declarist.
Me,
suppressive person,
and she's really nice. And deep down, I knew she'd probably be really nice. And I've seen her videos, so I feel like I kind of know her. And I just felt so weird. I mean, I still feel weird. I feel less weird now, but I felt really weird for a while. Like, you can't. Well, yeah,
you're like an alien.
Yeah.
Well, you literally don't know the outside world, and
yeah.
And all these people that you were told are horrible, evil people are the people that are helping you to not have to be at the crazy, evil place. So it's kind of like a weird,
exactly.
It's a really weird thing. And you don't know who you can trust because you've been told so many things over so many decades that you don't know what's reality and what's the truth. And you kind of have to find out and ask a bunch of dumb questions in order to find out what the score is. So.
Plus, you don't know if anyone's going to come after you and try to talk to you. And I'm like, I don't want to talk to anybody. And I know that they would know the exact person to send or to talk to me to be like, you know, you need to come back. We'll sort everything out. We'll get you in a session, blah, blah. We'll give you a CSR factor. And like the case supervisor will tell you what's wrong with you and whatever. And so I'm like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't, least of all, anyone I've been friends with. And I know they would know exactly who to send, you know? So. Yep.
And that's why we ended up, I remember, I think you spent the first one or two nights in the hotel and then, I think you commented.
She was staying at the hotel at night and then she would just hang out at our house all day long.
Right.
And after 2 days, I was like, this is ridiculous. Why doesn't she just stay in the guest room if she's going to be here all day?
Guest room anyway, so.
But we didn't want to assume that. So that's why we had you at the hotel. But
yeah, I remember you were hanging out
all day long, and you're like, and you're asking like, what's this down here? Oh, that's just a guest room. You know,
I couldn't find my contact lens solution the first night, and Claire had to bring me some. So Mark's like, you want to just stay with us so that, you know,
and you commented that you didn't want to be alone. You didn't really feel comfortable with that. Yeah. And we were like, okay, you know what? Let's just come stay with us. Let's just, you know, and whatever you need, we're here. And I remember too, you commenting that, something along the lines of that you knew that we were big bad SPs, but you didn't buy into that. And you were like, and I'm like, oh good. I mean, I hope I'm not coming off as a big bad SP because I don't think I am.
Yeah. You know, one thing, it's really funny. One thing I used to wonder about I'm like, okay, so there's people out there who are declared and then they have kids. It's like, what do their kids think of them? Are their kids like traumatized because they're SPs? Or I used to kind of wonder about that. I was being like, oh, those poor kids, they must be, you know what I mean? And then you meet your three boys and it's like, they're like wonderful people, you know? It's just like, no, this is just another, just more proof that it's just utter BS. They say about people.
Yep. And the best thing always is to live a happy, successful life outside of that.
Yeah. That's right. And the other thing, the other reason I wanted, I don't know if I mentioned this. There's a few reasons I wanted to talk to Mark, because I saw a lot of videos that Mark did when he was talking about the in-base and all this stuff, right? And plus he was on the shoot crew, and I always wanted to go to the shoot crew. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then when I heard this story of like, what he got in trouble for and this whole finance irregularities and stuff, I was just like, okay, that's probably bullshit. That's probably utter bullshit. Okay.
They tell all these stories on hate sites about us.
Yeah.
Of all these things we've done and everything. Yeah. And so it's funny that you said that, because a lot of times that's how people know to talk to us, is because they go, I saw this thing that Scientology put out about you, and I want to ask you about it. And then you tell them, and they're like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so
yeah, totally
that's how the Truth Rundown thing that happened in Clearwater and all these different articles that Freedom Magazine that we were in, that they passed out to all of Clearwater and gave every single Sea Org member. Those Sea Org members were like, oh, I know, Mark. This is craziness. This is the silliest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. So it's kind of funny how that backfires on them like that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask too, though. So now you're out, you're in Colorado. What were some of the things that were most helpful to you in reacclimating to the outside world and kind of
explaining things like I'm like 15 years old. This is how you get a driver's license. This is okay. This is what we need to do next. This is what we do next. Okay. So we need to do this with your ID. And I think I got a passport at the time too. It says like, okay, we need to do this next and this next. And you know, when you find an apartment or when you look for an apartment, do this or let's check out these places. It's just like literally talking to someone like they're at the level they were when they joined. Like a 15-year-old kid, 16-year-old kid, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because you've never done any of those things. So, and there's no kind of like, that's a good idea. We should make like a how to start your life after leaving the Sea Organization.
Yeah, because and then there's things that you don't even know that you don't know. You're like, oh, I didn't even know this thing existed. Or I can't think of an example right now, but there's still things like that where I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. And I didn't even know that I didn't know to even ask the question.
Well, like even when you went to, we got, you know, Claire helped you get a job and you have to fill out paperwork. And there was, you know, you had to do things just to get for the application, just to be able to get a job. And
or like you get paid like every other week. And I'm like, why don't you get paid once a week? And this year you get an allowance once a week, your whole like $46. And I'm like, really? You get paid every other week? That's weird. Well, that's the way it is. You want to take time off work, you know. My first job was at UPS, and I would just tell the manager, I'm like, hey, I need to take these, I'm not going to be here on these days. And it's like, he didn't need to know why I wasn't going to be there. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Thanks for letting me know type thing. And the same thing, I worked for Amazon for a little while and I would try to like over explain things to the managers. It's like, it's fine. I don't need to know. Just put in your request and it's fine. It's like, nobody cares what you do with your time.
In the C organization, if you want to do something besides work, you have to write a proposal like Ben-Hur the proposal. It has to be the most excruciating detailed justification of why you're not going to be working for 2 hours on Tuesday.
Exactly.
I will say one of my most memorable moments was teaching you to drive at the same time I was teaching my 16-year-old to drive. that was unique.
You might as well just say you were teaching 2 16-year-olds to drive.
No, I didn't say that. No, you were an excellent learner. Oh, good. But it was definitely unique.
Yeah, I had to drive in a Colorado winter after that, so that was exciting.
Yeah, oh, that's right, because it was literally snowing and the roads were icy.
Actually, the first time I drove to work was the first snow in Colorado for the year. I had to drive. I couldn't ride my bike that day. I was forced to drive.
Yep, I remember. Yep. Oh my gosh! Well, and amazing.
So you got it. So you ended up getting a job. You end up getting a car and you ended up getting your driver's license, a passport, an apartment.
Oh, that apartment was awesome. All to myself. And it was in such a great location. It was the best place I've ever lived, literally.
Wow.
And, nice. And the kind of wild thing was that the couple that owned that, we had known for many, many years, and they also ran a nonprofit that we participated in fundraisers and stuff with them. And so I think we were, I don't remember where it was or how we came across them, but then when we asked, through the connections we had, they said, oh, they have this apartment available. And so it was like, oh, they could say, and then they didn't really understand the whole, you know, the broader picture of this thing. It was just somebody that we needed to get an apartment for. And so then when we explained to them the whole thing, they were like, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. They were like even more willing to, you know, do anything and everything they could so that you would be in a safe space and you had kind of like a base of operations and you just had a place where you could be, where you didn't have to worry about anything. So,
and it was right on the other side of the hill from you guys. So
Yeah.
And so it all
before you were comfortable. Out. Yeah. Before you were comfortable driving, we got you that electric bike and you could just zip through and we'd take you to work or whatever.
That's a pleasure to work. Oh my God. It was so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A great route. I loved it.
Could you ever imagine? So now let's fast forward. So is there anything else that we didn't talk about or anything else that you did so I want to say, for somebody that is thinking of leaving the Sea Org, what would you tell them? Like, why did you end up going, helping? How did the aftermath end up helping you? And how did it work out for you?
Well, the aftermath helped me with everything. I mean, helped me actually leave, like physically leave. Because, okay, and I've told this to people now that I talk to help with these sort of things, or people that have family who they're trying to get out or whatever. Excuse me. So if you can say, like, you know, I'll be on blah blah street corner at 4 p.m. and I need someone to pick me up, and they have to pick me up at 4 p.m. you can totally make that happen. You can walk out and be picked up, for example, or you can get a plane ticket or a bus ticket or a phone card, whatever, a SIM card, a phone, whatever you need to be able to get out is what the Aftermath Foundation can help with. And if you need, I don't know, a family member to come pick you up and they can't afford to fly over there, you can like fly them over there and pick them up or whatever. It's like whatever you need, the Aftermath can do, basically. And then because, like, I was in a unique situation because I came straight to you guys, and not everybody does that. So if someone goes to like some other place and they don't have any connections, it's like there's volunteers all over the place. They'll be like, oh yeah, I want to help. And, you know, someone can help you learn how to drive or get an apartment, or maybe you need some place to stay for a little while. It's like people, you know, people volunteer and say, you know, I have this space or I have this Airbnb that I can donate for a couple days or something. Like, it's like practically anything can be done. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It is amazing. It's absolutely, and it's all over the world too.
Yeah, and I want to say we've done this for people in many different countries. We've gotten people from one country to another country. Yeah. We've worked, and in some cases, we can even work with law enforcement where you're at. If you're worried that something's going to happen, we have contacts in law enforcement where we can actually even help you get maybe a little bit of air cover. Like, they will be ready if anything happens to rescue you or help you, or you can go to them, you know, whatever it is. It's different for every single person is different. Nobody's exactly the same, but no matter what, we're trying to think of all the things that when we were there, we knew we couldn't leave because we didn't have a place to land, or we didn't have a place, somebody to help us, or how am I going to get a job? How am I going to get a place to live? All of the things that the reasons why you don't leave, you don't want to, almost in all of these cases, the person doesn't want to be there anymore, but they have no way to not be there anymore.
Yeah.
That's
and you're also thinking, like, you know, 10 steps ahead, like, yeah, I want to leave, but I don't know where to go.
Yeah.
So that kind of acts as like, it kind of like stops you from planning on how to leave. It's like, I don't know where to go. I don't know how I'm going to leave. It's like all that can be taken care of. All you have to do. And I really hope, I'm going to get emotional now. I really hope that there's people, like, I have a lot of friends in LA. I have friends in Columbus who I would love to see leave. And I really hope that any of them see this or see any of my videos and just evaluate whether or not, like the simple question of, are you happy doing what you're doing? Okay. If you're not, leave, go do something that you love doing. I'm back in Oregon, which is where I started. I like went full circle. It's kind of a longer story, but I'm back where, you know, I'm near family. I have pets. I'm with a wonderful person. I'm going to start my own photography business. I'm like, you know, I'm like, everything I'm doing, I love doing. And I'm like, just dreamed of being able to do. And I was just like stuck for so many years. Yeah. And I know that there's people like that. And I have friends that probably feel the same way. But they're like, okay, so I don't know how to do that. I don't know where I'm going to go, blah, blah, some problems like that. But that can all be taken care of by the foundation. So I hope that somebody sees this and that helps.
Me too. Me too. And I'm just so grateful that you trusted us to be your first landing pad here in Colorado. And anyway. We're super grateful too for your invaluable work for the foundation as well, by the way.
Yeah. And that's the other thing it's really fulfilling for me, because now I'll say it, you know, publicly, I'm working for the foundation. So now I get to help people that are in similar situation to me, or help their families or give their families direction, or, you know, help people get a grant who are like, you know, I'm really fucked up right now and I need help. And it's just great, because it's like whole circle.
Yes, I know. Fantastic. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing the way life works out.
Can you imagine now being where you are? Can you imagine that this happened in such a short period of time compared to where you were, you know, just 2 years ago?
No.
Basically, you were doing your thing. And and then now it's like,
amazing.
You have a whole new life.
It's totally amazing. And it's even more amazing when I, like, when someone asks me, like, people ask me all the time, when did you come out? And I'm like, oh, 2021. They're like, really? That's just like a couple of years ago. I'm like, yeah. But then I think about it, I'm like, wow, lots happened in that time.
Yeah.
Yes. And you have real life markers now. I'm sure you don't have any trouble remembering dates and times for that period.
Exactly. Yeah. It's true. Like this is when I work this job, and this is where I was living. Because now I've lived on both the East Coast and the West Coast. East Coast, West Coast, and the middle. I've like been now I'm back on the West Coast.
Yes.
And you have actually done a lot of road trips since you left as well. So you've driven all over the United States and you've seen a ton of things.
I got to take a vacation.
Yeah, you got to go on vacation
into the Grand Canyon. We drove from the Grand Canyon from Colorado to the Grand Canyon, which was fabulous.
That's amazing.
And then from
a fun trip.
And then from the East Coast to the West Coast, and we moved over here.
And you have absolutely amazing photos. Amazing.
Oh, you should put can you put a link to my portfolio?
Absolutely.
Of course. Absolutely. Hey, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So everybody watching, please check out Catherine's amazing photography portfolio. We will include the link in the description.
Yay! So is there anything else that you wanted to cover, Catherine, that we didn't talk about? Any other thing you want to say?
That's it. I mean, I'm sure we can just that I want to do more videos and talk about more stuff.
Yes, awesome. Let's definitely do that. That would be amazing. Yeah. And we'll do a live Q&A for this one too. Just see, we had so much story to cover that this was easier this way, but we can do that as well, because I know you were eager to answer any questions.
Yeah.
Well, that's totally. That's a great idea. We'll just, once this one comes out, then we'll post a thing on the community tab or wherever when Catherine and Claire or myself will do a live Q&A.
Yes.
And then that would
be all three of us.
Yes, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah. Okay, awesome, you're not allowed
to go out until we do. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, this was a bit of a longer video that we did today, but we wanted to tell all of Catherine's story and how she was able to escape from Scientology and the Sea Organization. And we want to make sure that anybody watching this, if you've got a family member or you've got a relative or a friend or an old acquaintance that you know is in the Sea Organization and you end up talking with them, if they express that they are not happy or things are going sideways or whatever, if you let them know of another Sea Org member that we helped get out, or if they can get onto the internet and you can send them a video, these stories and these videos affect different people in different ways. And like Catherine was saying earlier, we're telling stupid stories about the Imp Base, but to a Sea Org member, that video is answering all these questions.
Yes, all yes. Of it's these very, things. Very important. Yeah.
And it puts the pieces together that allows them to go like, oh yeah, that was a bunch of nonsense. Oh yeah, this was a bunch. Know, they knew it, but they didn't know why. So now when we're telling these stories, it hits different people different ways. Exactly. So that's why we do this.
One other thing I wanted to say is that if Mark said, if you have a family member or a friend or whatever who's been in and say they've been in for 20 years, it doesn't don't give up on them.
Yes. In fact, if you've lost touch with them, you don't know where they are, we have a missing person directory now on the Aftermath Foundation website. Mm-hmm. So you can post there and we can keep an eye on and get new information so that we can eventually hopefully abolish disconnection altogether.
Yeah, we're exactly. Keeping track of the people that are asking about Sea Org members or Scientologists. And then we're also connecting different people with other family members. So sometimes we say, hey, I want to know what happened to Joe Blow. And that there's so many ex-Sea Org members that we talk to now that we can send them and say, hey, does anybody know where this person is? And in most cases, we can track somebody down in the Sea Org Scientology organizations. We can track them down within a few hours or days and get an answer to a family member of where this person ended up because they've lost touch with their person.
It's great. Yep.
Awesome, guys. Well, this was great, Catherine. Thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
We will definitely do this again. Okay, guys, thanks for tuning in. Until next time. Bye. Thanks for watching. If you'd like to help support the channel, feel free to check out the merch store link in the description. We have Hail Xenu, Xenu is My Homeboy, and BFG branded mouse pads, shirts, mugs, all sorts of other stuff in there that helps us to bring you new content on a regular basis. You can also pick up a copy of my book, Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology, in hardback, Kindle, and Audible versions as well. There's also a link to our podcast, and you can get that on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to watch another video, you can click on this link right here, or you can click on this one here, or you can click on the subscribe button right here. Thanks a lot. Until next time.